All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are talking about Pro Bowl snubs. We're talking about potential changes at the offensive coordinator spot, as well as the injury to Cam Newton and how it impacts this Week 16 matchup between the Falcons and Panthers.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I host this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are talking about Pro Bowl snubs and one player in particular on the Falcons that did not make the Pro Bowl. Well, you know, this is what we call a tease. We will also be talking about the recent report that Darrell Bevell is a strong candidate, I guess we could say, to potentially take over for Steve Sarkisian as the offensive coordinator of the Falcons in 2019. But we will first kick things off by talking about the recent news that Cam Newton will be shut down for the remainder of the season, and the Panthers plan to start backup quarterback Taylor Heinicke this week against the Falcons in Week 16. Certainly a surprising move from my perspective. I know Newton's been dealing with an injury, but I thought, given that the Panthers have lost six straight, Ron Rivera's coaching for his job, I did not expect this to happen. I thought that Cam Newton would be asked to gut it out for the rest of the season, because it obviously gives the Panthers the best possible chance of winning these last two games and you know, keeping their extremely slim playoff hopes alive. So the fact that they're moving on from Taylor Heinicke, certainly if this was the Locked On Panthers podcast, we could sit here and spend 20 minutes reading into that, what it means for Ron Rivera's future, what it means for whatever future. But the bottom line is, we're not the Locked On Panthers podcast. We are the Locked On Falcons podcast. Go check out Bill Rossetti over at Locked On Panthers to get his thoughts on this situation, who we had on yesterday's show. I think this is going to be, you know, interesting. Obviously, Taylor Heinicke is not as good as Cam Newton, but I don't sit here, wouldn't necessarily look at this matchup and be like, oh, well, this is an automatic win for the Falcons. I know for many of you guys listening, this is terrible news because Taylor Heinicke's not good, and that means the Falcons are going to win, and the Falcons are going to win this game, and then they're going to win Week 17, and of course, they're going to finish the season 7-9. They went from basically a week ago looking, you know, staring 4-12 in the face, and all of a sudden, they're going to be 7-9. And ruining their draft chance, just like the classic Falcons. They always ruin this, blah, 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 blah. I know you already done the rants and whatnot. But I would say not so fast. I don't think this is a guaranteed lock win. We've seen the Falcons lose some games to some bad quarterbacks. The initials BG, as in Blaine Gabbert, stand out in our eyes, where a certain 49ers team, triggered many a Falcon fan back in the day, saying, oh, you know, we plan on benching Colin Kaepernick and putting Blaine Gabbert in the lineup, but we are going to wait until he gets I forget the exact term, but basically we get a cupcake or a soft team for him to play against to give him the best possible chance of winning. I think the Falcons were like 5-1 or 6-1 at the point when that news broke and people were triggered and like, how can dare they say the Falcons are soft? And they proceeded to lose that game. And so, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that will happen this week, but I've seen it happen once. It certainly can happen twice. When you've lived through Blaine Gabbert and Sam Congado, two names that have lived in infamy here among longtime Falcon fans, you never take any win for granted. But it'll be interesting to see what Taylor Heinicke does. Watching a little bit of his preseason action this past summer, I think he's a fairly mobile quarterback that can do some things with his legs, so the Panthers can still use some read option stuff. They'll obviously be even more reliant on Christian McCaffrey in the running game and probably the short passing game, because I don't think, from what I saw, Taylor Heinicke is a particularly adept vertical passer by any means. So the game plan probably won't change all that much, but it is a winnable game plan. The Panthers can establish the run in this game, and McCaffrey can sort of carry the offense like he did in that first matchup in Week 2. And on top of that, the Panthers' defense can slow down the Falcons' offense, and particularly slow them down early in the game, that will allow Carolina to continue to run the football in the second, third, and fourth quarters at a point where the Falcons' defense has a typical tendency to wear down and then struggle to stop teams. We saw this exact game plan against, you know, basically the Ravens were able to pull this off. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Panthers couldn't as well. So we'll see how that, you know, works out. You know, I'm certainly a lot more optimistic with Newton out of the lineup that the Falcons will be able to take care of business this week. You know, after basically predicting the Panthers to win this game on yesterday's crossover episode. So I would probably switch that prediction, but we'll sort of see how things go. And we will be talking about, you know, a key to, again, the key to the Falcons winning this game is going to be their ability to score points. And a big part of their ability to score points is going to rest on the offensive coordinator. And we'll talk about sort of Steve Sarkisian's status and the potential of Darryl Bevell to be a candidate to replace him in just a moment. But as you guys know, it is week 16 of the football season, and that means time is running out for you to get in on the action. Every game matters now, whether it's teams fighting for playoff spots or trying to tank for that number one pick, and you can take advantage with huge cash prizes. Single game fantasy football is the newest way to play fantasy at DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. If you've been on the fence about trying DraftKings, now is the time. DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just one game, making things even easier for you to put together a great lineup. Perhaps that lineup is going to even include Taylor Heinicke because you believe that he's going to pull a Blaine Gabbert 2.0. And you can take advantage of that because you can now draft six players from a single football game, one captain and five other players. Your captain is going to earn 1.5 times as many points as the rest. It's that simple. Six players from one game. Just stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. That in competition could include me. More on that in a second. All you have to do is go to DraftKings.com or download the app right now. Use the code LOCKEDON to enter a single game contest for free this week with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. And what I wanted to mention to you guys, which I've mentioned the last couple of weeks, is Locked On listeners have their own league set up. I'll put out the link to that league on Twitter at FalcFans, at Locked On Falcons, as well as on the Facebook page, Locked On Falcons, as well as at the website, FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. Hit that link up, make your deposit, $5 minimum, and get in the action. You get a $3 free play, and I'm going to start up a contest this week. You can join me, win some cash, get some bragging rights, talk some trash, whatever you want to do. You know, I did earn some little bit of cash last week. I might be setting up a thing, you know, I might take Taylor Heinicke in one of these games and see what, I, you know, maybe I can get some of that Blaine Gabbert magic, take advantage of this insider information I have that the Falcons are terrible against backup quarterbacks, and maybe take home some little extra cash to redeem my terrible season-ending struggles in the playoffs in my season-long fantasy football leagues. And DraftKings is going to help me out, and maybe it can help you guys out. Again, check out that link. It's going to be on Twitter. It's going to be on Facebook. It's going to be at FalcFans.com. And make sure that you hit that link and join me this week. All right, let's talk about Darryl Bevell and the report that came out earlier this week that he is a potential candidate to take over for Steve Sarkisian. I would like to say that I think this report is not necessarily a report of something that is impending. I think this is just more dot connecting. And what I mean by that is that we all know that Steve Sarkisian, and this report also mentioned Marquand Manuel, sort of being on the hot seat. That is not news. That does not require inside information. We've been talking about that quite frequently on this podcast for basically a month, if not longer. And so, you know, I think at this point in time, Darryl Bevell becomes an obvious candidate. He's not currently, you know, I don't know if he's coaching elsewhere or he's a consultant anywhere, but he's certainly not calling plays in the league after, what, 7 seasons as the play caller in Seattle. And, you know, that time overlapped with Dan Quinn's time there, a couple of seasons where Dan Quinn was the defensive line coach, in addition to a couple of years where Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator. And so there's an obvious connection between those two, and it makes perfect sense that Dan Quinn, after hiring two coaches in Kyle Shanahan and Steve Sarkisian, that he had little to no experience working with, would then, if he is forced to hire a third offensive coordinator, would hire somebody that he's much more familiar with, and so therefore is not going to be surprised one way or the other by, you know, whatever sort of surprises he was surprised by with Shanahan and Sarkisian. So, you know, it again, it's a makes sense. I'm not suggesting, I don't think it indicates that this decision has already been made. I don't think the Falcons have made a decision in regards to Steve Sarkisian in his future, and certainly not a decision in regards of who's going to be the next offensive coordinator, but it certainly is a plausible scenario, I think. As for my thoughts on, you know, what do I like this potential possibility? Not really. Doesn't necessarily move the needle for me. But, you know, the one thing you will say for Darrell Bevell is the fact that he's, what, spent 7-plus years calling plays in the NFL means that the lack of experience criticism that I myself and I'm sure others have leveled towards Sarkisian as a major limiting factor in why his offenses haven't been consistent week to week, why his offenses have a tendency to struggle to make mid-game adjustments and all those sorts of things that if you've been a regular listener of this podcast for over a year, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and we've brought up a bunch of times. You can at least make the argument that with that experience, Bevell won't be as prone to falling into the traps, although I could sit here and maybe bring on, you know, someone who covers the Seahawks for the last, you know, 7 years and would say, oh, those were the exact same things that Darrell Bevell struggled. Maybe. I have no idea. I'm certainly not an insider. You know, maybe if this comes to fruition, we'll bring on, you know, some folks like Locked On Seahawks to discuss it in depth. That's probably the positive you would say for Darrell Bevell. The negative is that he wasn't necessarily a great successful play caller in Seattle. His offenses were primarily driven by Marshawn Lynch. As they, you know, got further along in Russell Wilson's career, they tried to transition to a more of a pass-first offense. They did make improvements in those years, but it wasn't as if they were, you know, this highly efficient, highly effective passing offense. But the one thing you will say is that they were very explosive. You know, I think a lot of that is owed to Russell Wilson's ability to sort of create off-structure plays and extend plays and then heave up, you know, those 30-yard bombs down the field to guys like Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett. I don't necessarily know if that's going to be a huge part of the Matt Ryan offense, although, to be fair, Matt Ryan has, you know, done a much better job doing things like that over the last couple of seasons under Steve Sarkisian than he certainly did over his first, you know, 9 seasons under other offensive coordinators. But again, I don't know if that's going to be a huge part of their offense. So, you know, I think, you know, whether or not Bevell's going to be able to repeat his previous success, if you want to call it success here in Atlanta, it remains a question. But then you can make the argument that maybe, you know, if he had a quote-unquote more traditional drop-back quarterback like Matt Ryan, he might have had more success in Seattle. Who knows? You know, I'm curious what Matt Flynn thinks about this. You know, I don't necessarily think this is an impending or an inevitable move. I think, you know, we'll have to sort of see how Sark, you know, as well as Manuel takes care of business over these next 2 weeks to sort of, you know, salvage their job. And certainly if the Falcons do wind up winning this week and then again in week 17, I think it will be a lot easier, a lot more palatable, you know, at least as far as, you know, a public relations standpoint, for the Falcons to then decide to keep both of their offense and defensive coordinators into next season. We'll sort of see how things play out. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about Matt Ryan's Pro Bowl snub and sort of my issues with the Pro Bowl in just a moment, but I do want to plug the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast hosted by John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, as well as the Draft News Podcast hosted by Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino, both of them part of the Locked On Network. Find them wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, where you can find those guys' written content, in addition to several other people's written content devoted to college football, as well as the 2019 draft, your team every day. So let's talk about Matt Ryan's Pro Bowl snub. For those of you that don't know, Julio Jones and Alex Mack did make the Pro Bowl. Matt Ryan did not. I think you could potentially make a case that maybe Jake Matthews was also deserving of being in the conversation for the Pro Bowl. But, you know, it's hard to make the Pro Bowl, particularly when you look at the guys that sort of did make the Pro Bowl ahead of him have traditionally been, you know, much more acclaimed left tackles over the years. And it sort of probably takes a couple of good seasons of Jake Matthews putting it together before he's going to start being a serious contender for that spot. So the biggest snub was Matt Ryan. And from what I understand, he is also not the first alternate for the NFC team. That honor goes to Mitch Trubisky, which is a surprise to see, you know, Jared Goff and Drew Brees making the Pro Bowl. That was a no-brainer. Aaron Rodgers making the Pro Bowl. That was a surprise. I thought if anybody was going to prevent Matt Ryan from being in the Pro Bowl, it was going to be Russell Wilson. So the fact that Russell Wilson nor Matt Ryan are considered the top four quarterbacks in the NFC based off of the Pro Bowl voting is a big surprise, and certainly Matt Ryan was certainly deserving the criticism, the frustration. I certainly think that Matt Ryan should have made the Pro Bowl. It's a travesty that he did not. However, you know, when it comes to the Pro Bowl, I think these things are often a travesty. It's been a situation where, you know, for almost 20 years, I've sort of looked at the Pro Bowl as a bit of a joke. I was all prepared to sort of go into a rant about why the Pro Bowl is a joke and why it's all flawed and stuff. But, you know, I actually did a little bit of research, and part of it is I have cared so little about the Pro Bowl over the years that I did not realize that they completely changed the voting format in the last couple of years. It used to be that the Pro Bowl, you know, they would start voting back in like week six of the season. And I always thought that was the stupidest thing in the world. It made sense like in the 90s before the internet and because you had to vote by mail. But in the technological world where you can vote online, it just doesn't make sense to vote that early and to have those votes count the same as somebody, you know, someone who's watched 10 games and made their Pro Bowl vote versus someone who's watched, you know, 5 games or whatever the case may be. But apparently voting now only begins in like week 11, ends in week 14. So there's really like a month long period. I didn't realize that you could also vote for the Pro Bowl on Twitter. Again, this is part of how much I stopped caring about the Pro Bowl is I don't even pay attention to the format anymore. So, you know, I will give to the NFL. They have improved the vote. Those are improvements. I'm not going to sit here and say it's a perfect system by any means, but those are significant improvements to how it used to be. So, you know, there is growth from the NFL. So I can't necessarily go on my, you know, 10-minute rant about how the voting system is flawed. But, you know, it is a situation where the players, coaches, and fans vote for it. Look, you know, going back to what I said, I've sort of seen the Pro Bowl as a joke for 20 some odd years. It goes back to 1999 when I was still in high school, and Michael Strahan went to the Pro Bowl that season when he had like 5.5 sacks that year. He had two previous years where he was one of the best passers in the league. I think he had 29 combined sacks, and then went to the Pro Bowl for a third consecutive year when he had 5.5 sacks. Not to say that Michael Strahan didn't have a great season that year, but it certainly wasn't deserving of being a Pro Bowl type of player. And that was sort of the point where I was like, oh, this thing is a joke at this point. And I haven't really paid all that much attention. I don't think I've really voted for the Pro Bowl. I might have voted the most recent time. It's probably maybe like 2013 or 2014 where I think I voted just so I could come on a podcast and be like, oh, here were my Pro Bowl votes or something like that. But other than that, I don't think I voted in a very long time. So it's not something I put a whole lot of stock into. I get some of the criticism for why people make a big deal about this for Matt Ryan. He deserved to be a Pro Bowler, but I'm not necessarily outraged by the fact that he was snubbed. I don't get too outraged about this person getting snubbed or that person getting snubbed because I don't think it's that big a deal. I know the argument has been made that, you know, these Pro Bowls matter when it comes to people's Hall of Fame resume, and I do certainly agree with that to a certain extent, particularly with any player, but especially quarterbacks. You know, it's about how many rings you have, what your stats are like, and that sort of how many Pro Bowls you go to. Like, if you've been to 8 Pro Bowls versus someone who's only been to 3, that's going to make a significant difference on your potential Hall of Fame resume. So I get from that perspective, people can be like, you know, every one of these Pro Bowls matters. But I think people can exaggerate that a little bit because part of it is, for me at least, when you look at Matt Ryan, you know, obviously he doesn't have the Super Bowl ring. He's been to a Super Bowl. So that is something. It's not everything, but it's something. And I think when you look at his stats, presumably, you know, assuming that he continues to play at a comparable level that he's played the last several years, his stats are going to be pretty ridiculous when he retires. You know, if you assume that Matt Ryan's going to play another 4 to 7 years, you know, or let's just assume he plays another 5 years. And let's just assume from just looking purely at passing yards, if he has just as many passing yards over the next 5 years that he has had over the last 5 years, which, again, is not crazy because we've seen both the highs and lows from Matt Ryan in that span where he's had some pretty poor years in that run and some pretty outstanding years in that run. And if you look at those things, he's on pace to finish his career if he just plays 5 more seasons like he's had the last 5 years with like 69,000 like 500 some odd yards or something like that, which is a ridiculously high number. For those of you that don't know, there's only 4 quarterbacks in NFL history that have hit that 70,000 benchmark. Tom Brady just became the 4th. Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees are the only other ones. Every quarterback that has had a career benchmark of 47,000 yards has made the Hall of Fame. Matt Ryan is currently at 45,000. So I think it's very favorable that he will wind up being in the Hall of Fame if he continues to play at a high level. You look at the current active quarterbacks, I think it's six of them: Breeze, Brady, Rodgers, Roethlisberger, Rivers, and Manning. I think all of those guys are above 50,000 yards. And I believe that all six of those guys will wind up being in the Hall of Famer. I don't necessarily think Eli Manning is deserving of being a Hall of Famer, but I'm reasonably confident. I would bet money right now that he probably will wind up in the Hall of Fame. I also think that, I'm not necessarily 100% convinced that Philip Rivers will be in the Hall of Fame, but I'm like 96% convinced that he will be. It's kind of a similar situation to me with Matt Ryan right now. I think, I'm not 100%, it's not a slam dunk like I think it is with some of those guys I mentioned, where it's like, for a fact they're going to be in the Hall of Fame. But it is one of those things where I think it's very, very likely that he will be in the Hall of Fame. So I feel like the hand-wringing, the outrage over this and acting like this is going to make and break his legacy and ruin his Hall of Fame chances, I don't really buy with. Again, he's had, three Pro Bowl caliber seasons, made two Pro Bowls over the last 5 years. If he has a repeat of that, which again I think is very reasonable and very, very plausible, if not likely, then he'll probably have another 2 or 3 years where he can pad on to his Pro Bowls, which will give him, 6 or 7 Pro Bowls, which is more than enough to solidify his Hall of Fame resume, in addition to how many is his passing stats, in addition to the possibility of making another Super Bowl appearance and potentially winning it. So I feel like this is sort of the equivalent of people who are talking about, this might hurt Matt Ryan's Hall of Fame chances if he plays another 7 years and then retires and then has to wait another 5 years before he's out. Like, you're talking about Matt Ryan won't be up for the Hall of Fame until 2030, until 12 years from now. And so acting like, this is a big deal from a conversation that's really not going to occur for at least another 10, if not 12, if not more years, is kind of ridiculous in my eyes. It's kind of the equivalent of a first grader bringing home a not so glowing progress report and their parent being like, oh no, this is going to ruin their chances to get into Harvard or something like that. I just think people have a tendency to overreact to these things just for the sake of being outraged. I could sit here, I talked about this a little bit during the summer where people got triggered with, the whole Jalen Ramsey thing with Matt Ryan, calling him overrated and whatnot. And I just, ever since that 2016 season, I feel like, people have acted like, woe is Matt Ryan. And so, he's this huge victim and he doesn't get enough respect. And I just find that a little grating and a little bit annoying personally, and a lot annoying, but I will downplay how annoyed I am by it at this current time. So, it's one of those things where I don't necessarily feel the sort of sadness and anger that Matt Ryan got snubbed from the Pro Bowl, but it was a legitimate snub. It was disconcerting. I at the very least, I always sort of thought he would be the first alternate. And so if and when someone like Goff or Breeze were potentially going to sit out the Pro Bowl due to their team being in the Super Bowl, then he would have an opportunity to play. But who knows, maybe Trubisky and the Bears will go to the Super Bowl, and then, Matt Ryan will get his opportunity if Goff or Breeze or Rodgers decide to sit out the game for whatever reason, due to injury or whatnot. So, there's still seemingly at least a possibility that he'll be able to play in this game, and a lot of this anger and frustration will have wind up being for nothing. But, at this time, that doesn't seem necessarily likely. Yeah, that's it, guys. There you have it. We will wrap up this week with a Christmas Q&A so that you can send in all your Falcons or whatever questions, for tomorrow's episode, whether that's on Twitter at FalcFans. Better yet, just send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter page. You can also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. The email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com, as well as you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So look for that, and definitely look for that DraftKings link so that you can get in on some of this action on Saturday. And also, I should let you guys know that the giveaway for Robert Alford, Game Worn Gloves from Week 13, is still going on. I will probably wind up picking a winner on Friday and then trying to, get that shipped at some point early next week or the middle of next week so that you can hopefully get it before the end of the year, sort of as a late Christmas gift. But if you want to jump into that contest, all you have to do is go to my Falc Fans Twitter page. It's the pinned tweet at the top of that page, at Falc Fans, and just hit a retweet. Or you can go to the Locked On Falcons Facebook page and just like the post. And at random, you know, probably a Friday or Saturday, given my propensity to forget things and procrastinate things. But at some point this weekend, I'll pick a random winner and we will, you know, get that out to you, hopefully before 2019 hits. So there you have it, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons. Your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I realized while I was editing the podcast that I had some additional thought to the Pro Bowl conversation, but I do want to correct some bad information that I had previously. I mentioned Aaron Rodgers as one of those quarterbacks that, you know, sort of had already surpassed 47,000 yards and was sort of a lock, but he's only got 42,000 yards. So he's actually below Matt Ryan on the active list and the all-time list in terms of passing yards, in large part probably due to the injuries that he sort of suffered, given that he started the same amount of time period that Ryan has had. The thing I wanted to add is I think going back to what I said earlier, where, you know, we're talking about something, you know, a 2030 conversation in 2018. And I think part of the thing we have to understand is how much of unknown is what's going to happen in the future. Like, we could reach a point, say, you know, in 5 years where, you know, at a certain point, the entire format for how the Pro Bowls are determined or whatnot, you know, changes. Like, we could get to a point where Pro Football Focus all of a sudden has sort of perfected their thing and they're picking the Pro Bowl every single year in the future or whatnot. So, the other thing I would add on that similar note is, like, by the time we get to 2030, we'll have, like, I think, like 25 years, assuming Pro Football Focus is still going strong at that point in time, but we'll have 25 years of Pro Football Focus data to sort of look at it. And then all of a sudden the whole paradigm of, you know, how many rings you have, how many yards you have, how many Pro Bowls you have, is may not be as significant a sort of perspective in a way of sort of calculating who's deserving of Hall of Fame status as, you know, just simply looking at, you know, how many, you know, top five seasons does this guy have in terms of Pro Football Focus, how many top five DVOA seasons type of things, you know, how far, you know, are advanced stats going to be in regards to football 12 years from now that could wind up giving a complete reappraisal to Matt Ryan to the point that, you know, the whole notion of somehow he's going to be locked out of the Hall of Fame is going to seem pretty ridiculous 12 years from now. And so that's the last thought I wanted to say. It's just part of my thing of, I remember back in 2016 when I was being very butthurt about the Falcons offseason when they brought in Dwight Freeney for a workout in May and they didn't sign him. I remember going on Twitter and complaining and just going on a huge, huge, massive, angry rant on Twitter about how the Falcons were being stupid and because they didn't sign Dwight Freeney, whatever. And then lo and behold, like 2 months later, they signed Dwight Freeney. And what I learned from that, and I always try to learn from, you know, all the mistakes I make, is like, sometimes you don't have all the information and jumping to a conclusion based off of a lot of times you know you don't have all the information and jumping to a conclusion based off of limited knowledge is probably not a smart thing. You're just going to look stupid in the end, as I did, complaining about the Falcons not signing Dwight Freeney and how it was an indicator of how terrible Dan Quinn and this regime is and how they're going to cost, this season's going to be terrible and all the sorts of things. It just ended up working out. And so that's why I would be like, people need to pump the brakes before they start writing those columns about how this Pro Bowl snub is going to ruin Matt Ryan's Hall of Fame chances. Just pump the brakes, you know, don't hit send, don't hit publish quite yet on that column. And just, you know, just chill out, take it at time. You can, your anger, your frustration is valid. I'm not trying to dismiss it, but it is one of those things where you just don't go too crazy and acting like this is some huge, you know, this is whatever people are saying it is. That's all I've been saying. All right, postscript over.